This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a chef for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis on this murky Sunday morning.
Sun's coming through. Looks like the sun
whatever.
Is going to come through.
I want to remind everybody later that Lamb Jam is on at Union Market.
Woo-hoo!
We're going to be emceeing the event.
We are going to be emceeing the event.
Isn't that what I said?
I have no idea what you said.
Well,
it sounded like me.
You're only interested in what you're going to say next.
Okay.
So, but we got a great show.
Mm-hmm.
We have an unbelievably slimmed down Jamie Leeds with us. I got to hear about that, too. She looks great. She's an old friend of the show. And speaking of old friends of the show, Hank's Oyster Bar is celebrating its 10th anniversary, the original one down on
Q Street. I can't believe it's been 10 years.
I know. It's amazing.
How old is the one in Old Town?
8 years.
Okay, 8 years. So we're going to be talking about that and some other stuff.
Some exciting stuff coming along. Yeah. All right. And Max Culler has been in studio before, and he is a leading partner at Proof, Doy Moy and Estadio, and a wine director.
Wine director at Doy Moy and Estadio.
And he is in today to talk about wines from Gamay. But more than that, he has put together this terrific promotion to not just educate all of us about wines from Gamay, but they are doing a promotion called Gamay. And it is all raising funds for research in pancreatic cancer, which Max's father, Mark Culler, a good friend of all of ours, died of recently. And Max has reached out to so many fabulous people around the D.C. area, other restaurants and bartenders, and they are all serving specials as well. And again, part of the proceeds will benefit research for pancreatic cancer. So he's going to give us an education and tell us where we can help.
Yeah.
Don't roll your hands at me.
She just went on and on. She must like you, Max. All right, so lots of places around town are hopping with nightlife and great food, and Silver Spring, you can be added to the list with the new All Set restaurant and bar in the lead. All Set puts a modern twist on coastal New England tastes, and we've got Jennifer Meltzer and Chef Ed Rivas in, the co-owners, to talk about what's going on at All Set.
In Silver Spring, and you passed over the pastry chef.
Oh, my gosh,
Diplomat,
yes.
Who is in here.
I thought you were going to talk about
Diplomat. I was, but you talked right over me.
Oh, well.
Not unusual for a Sunday morning. Anyway, Fabrice Mondano, he's the pastry chef. He actually has been in studio before. He has recently joined the team at Le Diplomat, and I was lucky enough to take a pastry class with him. And he is just doing fabulous things, and he brought in so much stuff. He's going to be bringing it in studio in just a bit.
Yeah, you took the class, but you didn't bring anything home.
Why would I?
I see. Okay. So, and what's a Foodie and the Beast show without a lot of delicious potables? And my answer to that is nothing. So we've got the guys from Brooklyn Pint, Jace Gonerman, who's the beverage director there, and owner John Andrade in. Brooklyn Pint's a beer-centric restaurant in Brooklyn, which is blossoming with all kinds of foodie activity. And we're going to taste some good craft brews, and one that's exclusive to you guys. And hear about what's going on out near Catholic University.
But now you guys are with the same people who did Meridian Pint and Smoke and Barrel, right?
That's right.
That's all of yours, right?
That's
right. You do all that together.
All in the same restaurant group.
Okay, because we've had Sam in from Meridian Pint.
Yeah, Sam was our original beverage director for the first few years. He's no longer with us. Jace has taken his place as of a year ago.
All right, Jace, Gauntlet Throne man. He was pretty good. No, I'm just joking. But why don't you tell us a little bit what you guys have going on at Brooklyn Pint?
So Brooklyn Pint is kind of the second incarnation of Meridian Pint in its own right. It is a really great community over in Brooklyn, Brookland. Sorry, we were talking about that, you and I. It is Brookland here in D.C., over in the Catholic University area.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a really great community there in the Monroe Street Market adjacent to the university, and we thought it was a great opportunity to put another version, another take on Meridian Pint over there, focusing all on American craft beer, an American-centric cuisine. Mm-hmm. And Chef Rebecca Hassel does a really great take on it.
Is she only at that restaurant?
She is only at that restaurant. Each restaurant has its own specific chef that, mm-hmm. that they put their own twist on everything that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jace oversees the beer program for all three locations.
Okay. Well, let's talk about a little bit, Jace, before we get to you, just a little bit about the menu at this restaurant at Brooklyn Pint.
So the menu at Brooklyn Pint that Rebecca has come up with not only taps into some of her preferences, some of the things that she really enjoys doing, but also incorporates some really great beers into some of her recipes, whether it be in her mussels, or that is to say, in the steamed mussels.
Right,
not,
I was like, okay.
Not her mussels.
But did she work out?
She's got great arms.
How buff is she?
I suspect that it ultimately does work its way to her mussels as well. But among other things, you know, we use some local beers in the spice mustard and the cheddar in her cheddar beer sauce that goes with the pretzels. We use a DC Brow Public in her steamed mussels. So she does some really great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
One of the more unique things that she has done that surprised me was a Puerto Rican dish called mafungo, which is a
I think you just like saying that word.
Mafungo.
I think that's one of the seven words you can't say.
Well, she, I actually took it to mean that when she first presented the idea to me. I thought she was insulting me. I wasn't aware of this dish.
All right. Well, we're going to find out about that just later on in the show, but quickly tell us what you're going to be pouring next.
So we're going to be pouring our house beer out of Brooklyn, which is an American IPA that we brew specifically for us with Franklin's out in Hyattsville.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Roy is known for hip-hop puns, so mm-hmm. we immediately settled on No Sleep Till Brooklyn.
Cool.
It's a very bitter, pale, citrusy forward,
I like it.
Double dry-hopped
Yum.
American IPA.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely not for everybody, but we originally brewed it as kind of a one-batch idea, and this is batch four.
All right.
Since we opened.
We're going to taste it and talk about it when we come back to you guys. Let's talk to Jamie Leeds.
Jamie
who
Leeds.
Is beloved by everybody in town, by Gourmet Magazine, by the Rammies, by everybody.
Thank you.
You know, I don't know that we've ever done this. How did you get to be you? How did you become a chef? And
I think we have done it, but give us a quick synopsis.
Well, I've been cooking for over 30 years now. I started peeling potatoes in New York City at a little place on the Upper West Side called the Popover Cafe. And there was a culinary grad there that taught me everything, taught me how to saute and cook. And I was running the kitchen in a couple of months, and it
so
was just a passion.
The work appealing.
It was, yeah. And this was back in the mid 80s when there weren't a lot of women chefs and not a lot of role models at that time. And I thought, could I really do this as a career and make money? And, but I loved it so much. I felt like I could not do it. You know, it was a passion.
So how did you get from there to Hank's? How did all that happen?
Well, I started cooking, and I researched places to work, and I worked in a couple of different places in New York City, and I finally found Danny Meyer of Union Square Cafe,
mm-hmm.
and that was the turning point in my career. And he's an amazing restaurateur, and I became he hired me. They didn't have a position, but he hired me anyway. And I just feel very lucky to have worked for him. And he, I eventually became a sous chef of Union Square Cafe after a few years working there. And then he was critical in sending me to France to work. I worked in France for a year, and he subsidized me.
Maybe he just wanted to get you out of the country.
Yeah. Possibly. He actually came to visit me in France when I was there.
Really?
Amazing. And so then from there, I went and I worked for Richard Melman of Let Us Entertain You,
mm-hmm.
Another great restaurateur. Taught me a lot about the finances and the runnings of the restaurants and all that stuff. And then, I always wanted to open my own place. I mean, it was a dream of mine to open my own place.
But what you did with Hank's was a specific style of restaurant. So
yeah.
What was it that you were
trying
to do
there? Well, I came to D.C. on a consulting gig. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to stay here. And
none of us were.
Yeah. But I actually saw a lot of potential for a new restaurant here because there were no neighborhood restaurants when I came here.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And I, you know, felt like kind of like DuPont Circle reminded me of Brooklyn a little bit. And I started looking around. I came to open 15 Rhea, which was back, you know, 13 years ago.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I started looking around and I found a spot and it just worked perfectly.
Well, the thing about Hank, I think we ate at Hank's the first week it opened.
We did.
It's so homey.
Yeah.
The one on Q Street is just so, I don't know how to put it. It's like,
well, David, that was 10 years ago.
I know.
Right.
Yeah.
I
and
had hair.
Also...
Did I have hair then? I think I did. But I mean, you know, just, you know, and the menu is so, you know, it's just so great. It's just so comforting.
Yeah. But you also expanded there.
Yeah.
You know,
I doubled the size.
Right. You doubled the size.
I was able to go through to the next door
but
space.
But you know what? Wait. Everything is so fresh. Where does all that seafood come from?
It's a lot of it's local. We try to source locally as much as possible. You know, from anywhere from Maine to down to, you know, North Carolina and Florida. And, you know, we have a lot of independent, small local vendors, fishermen that we buy from, local oystermen that we have a proprietary oyster from Warshore Oyster Company.
Right.
That we sell. It's called the Salty Wolf because Wolf was my father's middle name, Hank's middle name. And it packs a punch. It's a small little oyster. It's got a great flavor. And so what we do is 10% of the proceeds of that of selling of that oyster go to different foundations every quarter.
Okay.
So we're because my father died of a heart attack, we're doing the first one is to the Heart Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And then every quarter we change
it up.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about, so we've got this 10-year anniversary celebration on
tomorrow,
Monday. So tell us what's happening there.
So 10 years tomorrow, and we're doing to thank...
I think we should say cheers. Cheers for 10 years.
Everybody in this room knows how hard
it is to run a business like this. So congratulations.
So we're saying thank you to the community and all of our vendors and all of the people, all of our regulars and everybody that our support staff, attorneys, you know, bookkeeping, everybody that's supported us. We're having an open house with a lot of different food and drink from 5 to 9. And it's just going to be a big, huge celebration.
I want to say thank you for this lobster deviled egg.
Oh, you're welcome.
And you also have a lot on the horizon.
I have two projects.
Which are
working.
Totally different from the Hanks because you have three Hanks. Hanks on the Hill, Hanks in Alexandria, and the Hanks in DuPont.
Right.
So let's talk about these two other projects that you're getting into.
So I'm doing a cocktail bar up in Petworth called the Twisted Horn. And that's going to be opening in the fall, hopefully. We're in construction right now. And, of course, there are construction delays, per usual. But it's going to be a great little spot. It's going to be about 40 seats inside. And then there's a huge patio in the back for another 40 seats. And we're going to have fire pits out there. And it's going to be lovely.
It'll be year-round.
It's going to be, we're going to have a lot of heating elements out there. Great. So we're going to try to extend the outside. In addition to that, I'm working on a project in Alexandria, in northern Old Town, called Hank's Pasta Bar. I'm extending the Hank's brand and I'm doing Italian concept with fresh pasta, antipasti, and just very rustic cuisine, wood-burning grill, you know, stuff like that.
And what made you decide to go that route? Are you just, you want to get
You know, usually what happens is the real estate kind of dictates what I do.
Okay.
And so this space, I happened upon this space, it was becoming available, and I thought it was a good location. There's a real need for Italian food in that area, in general, in the D.C. metro area. I think there's a need for good Italian rustic, you know, good value, fresh pasta and that kind of stuff. So it just came to me that, and I had been wanting to do an Italian concept with my chef, Nick Flores, who was the chef of Hank's in Old Town for 8 years. And he's very talented. He came up through, learned his skill at Al Tiramisu with, Luigi.
Oh, sure.
Who I can't pronounce his last name.
That's okay.
But, he's an amazing chef, amazing Italian chef. And so Nicholas learned everything from him. So we've been wanting to open an Italian concept for a while. So, yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to have to, pardon me, we're going to have to take a break.
Just cough into the microphone.
I did. I just.
Sounded beautiful.
Well, it's spring. Where can people go get some information about everything going on?
Everything's on the website, hanksoysterbar.com.
And it's on the list. Are you on it.com as well?
Of course.
What's that? Shameless plug.
Shameless.
All right. Jamie, good luck.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much
for joining us today. We have a full show coming up. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879. It's time we switch to longer-lasting Energy Star light bulbs. They're more efficient than the old bulbs, like a text message is more efficient than a carrier pigeon. and they cut down on our energy costs. Because in our own groundbreaking age, we deserve a light bulb that saves us some cash. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. With lower margins, your limited marketing budget has to work harder than ever. LinkedIn is one of the most robust marketing platforms available. With over 350 million members worldwide, 110 million in the U.S., and 3.1 million members within 50 miles of this station, I guarantee your customers and prospects are here. Connect, influence, motivate, create leads. I can show you how. When you want to maximize the return on your LinkedIn presence, email me at mark@federaldirect.net.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me. Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes, twice a day. I have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Let's go back to John and Jason, Brooklyn Pint, and Mofongo.
Was that right? Did he say it right?
Mofongo.
Are you? Yeah, you're saying it right.
No, I'm not cursing. I'm not cursing in Puerto Rican. What is Mofongo?
Mofongo. Now you got me saying it.
Mofongo
is a plantain-based, like a mashed plantain-based dish with Chef Rebecca does this really nice sauce on top. And, if you're not vegan, if you want to go the carnivorous route, you get pulled pork on top. Really nice roasted pulled pork.
And this is a regular thing on the menu?
It's a regular thing on the menu. Cool. And it was definitely one of the things that I assumed when she presented me with the preliminary menu. I said, you got to take that off. That's not going to work. And
everybody loves plantanos.
Sells out every night.
Sure.
Sells out every night.
Very cool. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the physicality of the restaurant. Like, what does it feel like? What's the layout like?
So at Brooklyn Pint, we decided to do more of a separated bar area versus a dining area. So when you walk into the right, it's a very ample bar area that has community tables, very high ceilings, an ample bar with 24 beers on draft, a lot of white Vermont marble as a decorative element. And then off to the left is the dining room, decorated with a lot of rustic reclaimed Southern Maryland tobacco barn wood.
Cool.
And a really nice banquet room in the back, with the kitchen being kind of the central hub of the entire.
That sounds a lot sexier. Brooklyn Pint kind of implies or infers, your cheer sort of bar, but that sounds like a pretty sexy place.
I don't get
place.
That at all.
I get it.
I don't get that at
well,
all.
I mean,
I wouldn't think that is so not where my mind would go, given what Brookland is like.
Right.
Like, I would think, sort of hipstery, really fresh and new. Like,
well,
I
won't lie. There are definitely a good handful of bearded, heavily bearded men there.
You're all over the city.
That contribute
see you guys
to
everywhere.
The hipster vibe. But that's not the entire vibe.
No.
Well,
let's talk about what we're tasting next.
Okay, yes. What beer are you pouring next?
The next beer that we have is a beer that just launched in D.C. in the past couple months.
Mm-hmm.
This is from Real Revival, shortened RAR.
Okay.
They're in Cambridge, Maryland, on the Eastern Shore.
Mm-hmm.
This is their Nanticoke Nectar IPA.
Okay.
And it has quickly become one of our best-selling beers across not just Brooklyn, but all three of our locations.
Okay, great. Looking forward to it.
That's good. All right, well, let's talk to Max Culler. We're talking Gamay. We're talking Gutmay, your promotion. And I think we have to say that we haven't really talked about it. Your dad was the most generous, loving, spectacular human being. And it makes sense to do something, in his memory and to help folks with pancreatic cancer. So you get lots of applause from us for doing this.
Thank you.
And Gamay is It sounds like a speech impediment word. It's like, gummy. But, I mean, you were giving me the history. Why don't I let you tell about it? And
Yeah, so the idea was, you know, well, multifaceted. You know, for one, definitely wanted to do something to honor my dad's legacy and memory and, you know, wanted to get it started as soon as possible. But that being said, the last several months have been a busy transitional period.
And yeah, I mean, I have to be honest. I'm so impressed at the quick turnaround and your ability to not just, you know, get everybody together and do all of it.
Well, it speaks, I think it, you know, there's so, I have so many things to say, but, you know, I'll start by saying it does speak to my dad's presence in the community, and it definitely, unbelievably touching how when I started to reach out to people with really very little lead time, in April, how it just started snowballing and where, you know, it was my goal to do this Gamay thing and make it a big thing in the future. You know, I was like, you know, I just want to do it at all this year. And I'm going to do it, and hopefully a few of my close friends will do it.
Right.
And I'm going to start trying to reach out. And it just, like, in a heartbeat, you know, one after one, more and more people started joining on, and to the point where I was like, whoa, I have a big project on my hands,
right.
More so than I necessarily even have the energy for. But that being said, it's great, you know, and I've been able to kind of carve out the time with, because there's, you know, people's response has been awesome. So let me back up a little bit and talk.
Well, what is it about Gamay that I mean, aside from the playoff of May, what is it that you love?
So I think you guys know from the past, I love kind of focusing on different areas of the wine world or beer world or whatever for periods of time, because I think it's a good way to just kind of generate interest and bring people in and try different things from what's going on. So we've done, you know, Portuguese focuses at Estadi before,
well,
Greek focus.
We brought you in before talk about some of your, you like these esoteric wines that don't get a lot of attention.
I do, because I like to, you know, I want to champion these wines. I want to give them some play. Mm-hmm. And I think when you do a unified kind of thing like that, it brings them a lot of attention. So the thing with Gamay is I thought it's the perfect wine for the month of May in terms of red wine, because it's a very light, in general, it makes a light styled, fruity, yet very fresh and kind of mineral-driven wine. Which,
well, for people who don't know where Gamay is from, like what that Gamay is a grape, can you give just a little more background on it?
So Gamay is native to Beaujolais in France, which is technically the southern part of Burgundy. So the northern part, obviously, has a lot of prestige and fame.
Field trip. I feel like we need a field trip to get a better idea.
An all expense, right?
Field trip. Maybe next year the producers there will fly us all in as part of
really
the Gamay festivities. But so basically, you know, it comes from Beaujolais. It's most well known for Beaujolais Nouveau, which is the style that's released around Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Very fruity, fresh, you know, young wine. You know, some people might describe it as more sweet, very juicy. In actuality, there's a lot of really serious wine that gets made in Beaujolais. It's referred to as Cru Beaujolais. There's 10 crus, 10 appellations of Beaujolais where, you know, these really great quality wines come from.
Mm-hmm.
I brought one of those along today from a cru called Fleury. And with those wines, the soils are all granitic for the most part. So you're getting a lot, you know, when you grow vines in a
Okay, you have to say that word again, because I don't believe I've heard that one
the
before.
The soil is all granite.
Okay.
So it's granitic. Don't
granitic.
You know?
sorry about that.
So okay. That's where Mofongo comes from.
I feel like there's so many ways I can go with that word at the moment.
You'll have
I just don't even know where
she's
to begin.
So out of it.
Granitic soils are good. I love granitic soils because they produce wines with great freshness, great that what we call, you know, minerality, that kind of feel of of stones and wet rocks and that kind of thing. So you get all this great upfront fruit, the strawberry and cherry, but then you get that mineral, which really keeps it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, great acidity, very food-friendly wines. So if people who like Pinot Noir will totally gravitate towards...
Well, this looks like more like a rosé, is it?
So the first wine I poured for you is a rosé. It's actually a domestic version
of
Gamay. It's from a winery in Berkeley, California called Edmonds St. John. And it is their rosé expression of Gamay. It's called Bone Jolly. So, you know, part of this, the other thing
about... this is grown, so Gamay grapes can be grown in other regions.
Exactly. So the Gamay promotion is, you know, designed to focus on the range of Gamay from around the world. at Doi Moi, we even have a Serbian Gamay on the list this month. We have a Michigan Gamay that I brought with me today.
Michigan?
Yep.
How
it's
is
awesome.
It?
It's really, it's Michigas? A little fruitier. It's, you know, a lot of cherry, a little, but I think it's delicious. It's actually been a really successful wine around town. But, you know, so I don't even know where to go next. But so the, I mean, I definitely want to talk a little about the coalition. I don't know.
Right.
But the, you know, so basically, I want, can I list some of the restaurants?
Yeah, I have them in front of me too, because I think it's really interesting. Who, like, you have Andy Myers from Think Food Group participating. Gina Trusavani created a cocktail, so they call me Big Papa specifically for him. So, but they're not all doing necessarily Gamay-based drinks, though, are they?
So Gina, she was super creative. She was actually the first person who responded when I sent out the email. It was amazing.
Right.
And I was like, someone who's not even wine-based is the first person to sign up. And she's like, well, I want to do a frozen gin-based cocktail, and I'll float Gamay on top, and we'll name it after your dad.
Okay.
And it's like, that is awesome. So she, you know, she managed to bring Gamay into her, her project there. Andy was super creative, where he was like, you know, we don't really have any Gamay at Haleo, but we have a lot of Mencia, and Mencia is a grape that comes from Galicia in Spain, which has a lot of similar qualities to Gamay.
Mm-hmm.
It also makes very fruity wines. It also, there's a lot of granite there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of soil expression and the way the wines drink, there's a commonality. So he's like, you know, we'll do Mathia at Haleo, and
okay.
we'll give proceeds of all our Mencia sales all month. So
you lined up, you've got an, I mean, you've got Dan Searing, Eric Siegelbaum at Le Diplomat, Todd Thrasher at Eve,
the guys from Cork,
Sebastian Zutant at Red Hen, who's an alumnus.
So wait,
of your...
I heard a rumor. Did Sebastian come up with Gamay?
Sebastian helped me modify the name.
Okay.
I was, you know, I was figuring out how what it should be.
Right.
The first version was a little clunky. It was Gamay-may.
Okay,
So Sebastian's like, you know what?
Didn't we
How about just Gamay? And I'm like, you know what? That works.
I think one of our kids used to call May-may breast milk.
Okay. So. Or breast milk May-may.
No, something.
It wasn't one of my kids. It was his kids.
The most amazing contribution.
It wasn't this mother. It was a different mother.
In the restaurant side is at the Jefferson. The Plume is actually giving 100% of their sales of Gamay all month long to
That's
the
great.
Foundation.
Amazing.
And the foundation is going to is the Lustgarten Foundation to Cure Pancreatic Cancer.
Mm-hmm.
They're based in Long Island. 100% of the money they get goes to research. They're an awesome charity. So in addition to being, you know, a really good cause, I think it's they're extremely excited that we're doing it too. So.
All right. Well, why don't you pour one more wine?
All right. Sounds
while
good.
While you're doing that, let's go back to our Brooklyn Pint guys. Yeah. Step up to the mic, gentlemen. So tell us just quickly about the last beer that you poured.
So the last beer that we poured is, again, Nanticoke Nectar from Raw Real Revival, named for the Nanticoke River. It's an American IPA. It's not as dry or pale or as aggressive as our house beer.
Right.
It's a really nicely balanced, kind of sweet, citrus, cantaloupe, honeydew, melon fruit forward IPA. And it can really appeal to almost anybody. The first beer is, you need to really like IPAs to like the first beer that we poured.
Right.
And luckily a lot of people do. The second beer is almost a gateway IPA because of all the
That's what I've
like,
heard about
sweet
it.
Malt.
Gateway IPA.
That's,
it leads to other IPAs.
Right.
It's
takes you down a desperate
it's,
path.
It's dangerous. It's,
he was muttering IPA when we picked him up. I stopped in your tracks, didn't I, Jace?
Yeah.
That's
okay, and what are you going to pour for us next, Jace?
So the next is going to be from a brewery that I know you guys are big fans of, have been here before, Three Stars.
Yes.
But it's one of their newer creations, Above the Clouds.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, this is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a minute.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. With lower margins, your limited marketing budget has to work harder than ever. LinkedIn is one of the most robust marketing platforms available. With over 350 million members worldwide, 110 million in the U.S., and 3.1 million members within 50 miles of this station, I guarantee your customers and prospects are here. Connect, influence, motivate, create leads. I can show you how. When you want to maximize the return on your LinkedIn presence, email me at mark@federaldirect.net.
Okay, so five tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food stall box, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. At 7, I shower. Every day I wake up
at 5. For those caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community to help us better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit AARP.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, everybody. We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We want to remind you that Lamb Jam, that annual event all about lamb, is today at Union Market from 4 to 7. We're going to be the MCs, which is probably reason enough to come, don't
Absolutely.
You think?
Well, but beyond and all that, the other chefs who are participating.
Oh, yeah, those celebrity chef guys.
Right.
They'll be there, too, and women. But it's going to be a real hoot. So if you have a chance, come on down to Union Market today.
There
at
are
four.
Just a few tickets left. It's almost sold out.
Okay.
Okay.
So Le Diplomat has been one of our favorite go-to restaurants since it opened, what, three years ago? William?
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
And one of the reasons is Chef Fabrice, who is the pastry chef, who is a...
Well, he's newer there.
I know, but I'm saying, you know, his stuff is so good, and we just keep going back for it. And he's here with us today. So, hey, Chef, how are you?
Hi, everyone.
How are you?
Great, and you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us today. So, I think we should back up. 2 weeks ago, I was invited into Le Diplomat to take a pastry class. And Chef Fabrice set up a whole demo station in the restaurant, and we all got to make our own different dishes. I have mm-hmm. to say, I think I did a pretty good job. I got to make my own
couscous
and profiteroles. Mm-hmm. What else did we make? Did we make one more thing?
We made the profiteroles, the gougère, and éclair.
Oh, and the éclair.
The gougères. The gougères.
Yeah,
the
gougères. It was all about the pâte à choux.
Yes, yeah. It was really fun and really fascinating because I don't think people realize how much work goes into these kinds of pastries. And Le Diplomat, you know, when it launched, it's certainly known for its bread program and this, like, sort of, you know, French brasserie feel. But you have really come in and you started, a couple months ago there?
Yeah, like end of January.
And but you've come in and really revamped the pastry menu. So how did you come into this very popular restaurant and sort of put your signature on the desserts program there?
Well, Le Diplomat is like everyone knows, it's a French restaurant, and French restaurant is really my forte. I love making French dessert, which, I mean, I like every other dessert too.
You know, you almost sound French.
Yeah. Thank you for the. Yeah, I have a really thick accent, so let me ask me again. I can really repeat myself. Yeah, so no, I mean, Le Diplomat is a restaurant where I can really enjoy making so many different classic desserts because mm-hmm. it's all about classic at Le Diplomat,
mm-hmm.
and I am it's a kind of dessert I really enjoy doing it because I've been doing this for so many years now. If I remember, it's about 25 years now I'm mm-hmm. in the industry, and. And it's going to be probably another 25 more, maybe.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Knock
right?
wood.
So,
knock wood.
But let's what? Talk about, because you were at places like Adore,
yeah.
you know, much more high-end, very fancy.
Schmancy.
Fancy restaurants.
What? Reese is a little shy, but I just want to chime in.
Wait, well, if you're going to chime in, you better speak
in the
mic. All
right, William, up to the mic.
He was also with Alain Ducasse in Monaco and Louis XV. He was at Tour d'Argent in Paris and numerous.
This is William Washington, by the way, the general manager who you see skulking around the diplomat. If you want a reservation, you need to call him because he's the only one who can get you in.
That's Washington. With you don't want too many people calling with an X. But well, let me ask something. You know, the word classic is essential here because there are all kinds of desserts in this world. What is a classic French dessert?
Well, I mean, baba, for example. A baba is a really classic, very old style.
You mean the baba rum?
The baba rum, right there. You know.
What is classic about that? I didn't realize that that was a classic French dish.
You know, it's baba rum is just a kind of a brioche family, same family of a brioche. Light, just whipped cream and rum. I mean, classic equal for me simple.
Simple.
And easy to describe.
But why rum? Because I don't think most people think when they think classic French desserts, they think rum.
Yeah. Well, I rum is, for me, because rum for me is the best marriage, in my opinion. And it's not, I'm not the one who actually invented, but... by any means.
But I mean, we can say it.
I'll take credit for it.
I kind of modify it my own way. I've been doing baba different version. Like I did like Armagnac. I served that with Armagnac or cognac.
I bet that was good.
Yeah, cognac and coffee, for example. A cream, coffee cream and cognac is perfect. Armagnac with a plum compote in the bottom. It's also perfect. It's something... it's all about simplicity and recognize. You have to recognize what you eat. Every flavors you have to recognize. I'm not the kind of person who will make a dessert and you kind of wonder what you're eating. And you need, because you lose the moment. You lose everything. You lose the aspect of the essential of the dessert. It needs to be simple, good, and very elegant.
Well, I was going to say, but your desserts are really elegant. I mean, when I think some people confuse simple with sort of messy. Do you know what I mean? People think when you say simple that that it's not executed well.
Yes.
But you're able to come up with classics that you may consider simple. But, I mean, when we look at the desserts that are spread across the room right now, I mean, these are pretty well-composed dishes. So let's talk about the chocolate dish you have right there.
So this is a feuilletine. It's a chocolate tart. I call that chocolate tart my own way. So it's a chocolate. So you have like a feuilletine. It's with made with crushed wafers and isn't it praline? You have like a chocolate a disc of chocolate streusel and a chocolate caramel cream.
Okay.
I call that creamer, but cream is the proper way. And I serve that with hazelnut ice cream.
Okay.
And instead of eating it, should it just be applied to each hip? Is that
You know, you have to enjoy every moment of your life, you know? You just have to. Yeah. And you, the thing is, you have to take it easy, you know? It's all with moderation.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so let's talk about, because I know this is one of your newer dishes, the meringue dish over there.
Yes.
Can we talk about that? Because I think it's really unique and really beautiful. So can
The vacherin. The vacherin. So the vacherin is a dessert. It's a frozen dessert. It's the way I build that. It's like a coconut lime banana sorbet and a mango passion fruit sorbet in the bottom, on top. And you have some delicate petals of coconut meringues all around, and whipped cream. And I finalize this with a pineapple julienne, lime zest, and the mango vanilla coulis.
It's beautiful.
It's very, you know, very simple, very refreshing for summertime. I recommend it.
And let's just talk lastly. We have the profiteroles, but then you also have your strawberry dish. Can you tell us quickly about that?
I would like to talk to you first about the profiterole because it's an ice cream.
And it's melting?
Sure. I want to make sure that it's actually, it's not going to
melt.
Be too messy.
Wow. Right.
So
beautiful.
It's a pâte à choux, built with bananas in the bottom, hazelnut praline, hazelnut almond praline, vanilla ice cream, and close with the second part of the pâte à choux, mm-hmm. Chocolate panels, and hot chocolate sauce, which is going to make the show out of the profiterole. It's just going to melt everything.
But you put something specific. I'm not giving away any secrets, I hope. But you put something very specific on top of your pâte à choux for the profiterole that makes it crispy. So can we talk about that?
You have a good memory, Nikki.
I do.
Yes. I actually, wow. Yes, I made like a, it's a, what I put on top is like a very thin like a dough, which is, you know.
Pâte sucre?
Kind of a pâte sucre without eggs.
Thank you.
Okay. Very thin. And
but
I cook it.
That's what makes this so beautiful on top, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it brings like some crunchiness to the to the dough. Mm-hmm. And it makes it more like a little bit funky, a little bit.
No, it gives it an incredible crunch.
Exactly.
And for people, since it's radio and you can't see what happened here, but he puts a very thin sliver of chocolate across the top of the profiteroles, and then they pour the hot chocolate sauce on top of it, so that chocolate melts and sort of encases it.
And the people in the studio can't see that because I just ate most of it.
Right, and it's really beautiful, and it's a really thoughtful, delicious dessert. We have one more minute. Tell us about those strawberries, because then we have to go.
The strawberries, strawberry dessert is my newest dessert coming up next week.
Okay.
So this one is actually a strawberries all around the ring. We have an almond crumble in the bottom. Mm-hmm. Yogurt, like a light cream of yogurt, honey cream, topped with strawberry granite, and it's served with a yogurt, creme fraiche sorbet.
Beautiful.
So very refreshing for some time.
So
I recommend.
Okay, so go to Le Diplomat, bother William.
Yeah, Le Diplomat is the place to go for
this. Marvel to what Chef Fabrice puts together. This is unbelievable.
All right, beautiful.
I managed to taste everything. All right, guys, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for coming in.
All right.
Thank you.
We have to squeeze in
our
next guest.
Let's go from 14th Street to Silver Spring. I grew up in Chevy Chase. We used to go to Silver Spring to go to the Silver Theater and not much else, but it's becoming a food mecca on its own, and there's a restaurant out there called All Set that is...
It just opened.
Just opened and adds to the flavor of... Sure, why not? Adds to the flavor of Silver Spring. We've got Jennifer Meltzer and Chef Ed Rivas here. They're the co-owners. Huh? Revis. R-E-A. I went with it. Revis. Sorry.
It happens all the time.
All right.
Sorry.
So why Silver Spring, you guys, first of all?
Well, I grew up in White Oak, and Ed and I started thinking about opening a restaurant probably about 3 years ago. And we were looking for places, and we're always going downtown or Bethesda to find a great place to eat. Mm-hmm. And then we came upon our space in the Montgomery Center on Fenton and just sort of thought, this is it.
Well, that's the heartbeat of Silver Spring. I mean, everything, that intersection is all there.
Right. We're between Colesville and Cameron on Fenton Street. So
that company used to be there. That's where,
So we just thought it'd be kind of fun to bring just a neighborhood restaurant to downtown Silver Spring.
But it's a New England kind of Nantucket slash...
Yeah, I mean, let's get your background, both of you, a little bit of how you came up with this specific concept for the Silver Spring area, because there's really nothing like that there.
Right, well, Jennifer, her family has property in Cape Cod, and 6 years ago when we met...
Jennifer, you're our new best friend.
Oh, hey!
We're available June through August.
Great! My dad's family is originally from Boston, and we had family in New Hampshire, so I always just went up there. So it's just a wonderful memories of that area. And then Ed was able to go and work on Nantucket.
Yeah, I spent 2 seasons in Nantucket. 2 years ago, I got a call from Chef Aaron Zurcher, who has the best raw bar in Nantucket. It's right, as soon as the yachts and the boats come in, her restaurant is right there on the water. And amazing raw bar, 9 different varieties of oysters from all over the world, but mostly from New England. And when I got that, I just felt, okay, this is what the area is missing.
Is it true that there once was a girl from Nantucket?
Once there was.
There was, but she's gone now.
Right.
Okay.
All
right.
So
how does that? I've been waiting the whole
show. Okay.
So how does that? We've got a minute till we have to go to commercial.
But then we'll come back.
How does that translate to Silver Spring, where you don't have, you know, boat stocking and all of that?
We wanted to give the feel. We wanted to open a neighborhood restaurant, but everyone's like, you need a concept. So I thought, what a great way to sort of pay tribute to Ed's experience and background up there, and then my family history to sort of meld it down with where I'm actually from. Mm-hmm. And then we thought that we needed a seafood restaurant in downtown Silver Spring. There's a lot of great restaurants, but there's nothing that was.
I know, because like the last seafood restaurant was like Crisfield's, right? Is that even still there?
It is. Great, but we're just doing something that I don't think anyone's doing. Yeah.
Right. That's totally completely different. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you guys brought in lots of tasty treats. We want to talk about the menu more, what you guys are serving for drinks there. We'll get into all of it. This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a moment.
Green light. Hey, girl. School zone. I'm getting hungry. Car changing lanes. You want to meet me for pizza? Stop sign. Intersection clear. Yeah, street. Pizza sounds good. Ball in street? Girl in street!
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text. Stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879. It's time we switch to longer-lasting Energy Star light bulbs. They're more efficient than the old bulbs, like a text message is more efficient than a carrier pigeon. And they cut down on our energy costs. Because in our own groundbreaking age, we deserve a light bulb that saves us some cash. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. With lower margins, your limited marketing budget has to work harder than ever. LinkedIn is one of the most robust marketing platforms available. With over 350 million members worldwide, 110 million in the U.S., and 3.1 million members within 50 miles of this station, I guarantee your customers and prospects are here. Connect, influence, motivate, create leads. I can show you how. When you want to maximize the return on your LinkedIn presence, email me at mark@federaldirect.net.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes twice a day. They have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to Allset co-owners Jennifer Meltzer and Ed Revis. I said it right, didn't I?
Perfect.
I guess we're best friends now. Allset's a great new restaurant in Silver Spring with a kind of a Nantucket sleigh ride.
New England coastal twist
to it. Mm-hmm. But you guys were talking about how you met and how this all got started. And some of the backstories are as interesting as what you're doing. So just give us that quickly.
Well, we met about 6 years ago and did the opening of the Capital Grille Chevy Chase. Mm-hmm. And I was a server and Chef was the broiler cook. And we had to get rid of the ribeyes that night. So we had a ribeye selling competition. And
what, did some of the cows come with more ribeyes than usual?
Yeah, we were big up on ribeye that day.
Yeah. Push the ribeye, take care of your server.
Right.
So I sold all the ribeyes, and Chef had to cook one for me. And then we started talking over some beers later about our philosophy on hospitality, and we thought, well, gee, I think this could be something fun. And 6 years later, we have our seafood-influenced restaurant. So a little bit of a transition from a steakhouse, but... Mm-hmm. Something different that we wanted to do.
Well, so as you were putting together your menu, let's talk about the kinds of things that you're putting on it, because I think Silver Spring is an underserved community, even though there's so much going on out there. Right. So what did you decide to do as far as what's on your menu?
Well, definitely, since the Nantucket and the New England feel, I mean, I worked in Nantucket, but we traveled all around New England before we opened this restaurant. Mm-hmm. And to see what everyone was doing, the different styles of lobster roll, we do the New England style, which is... the mayonnaise based, and we also do a warm lobster roll, which has the hot butter melted over top. So it's a buttery bun with buttery lobster. It's just
it's super buttery. An
indulgence of butter.
Right.
But also, we stay true to the area. I mean, Maryland has great seafood available. Rockfish is one of the biggest sellers on our menu, even though it's priced through the roof right now. People come for it every day. The crab cakes.
Why is it priced through the roof right now? Because it's rockfish season, isn't it?
No, it actually, the fisheries closed in Maryland. So it's so much harder to source now.
Oh.
So the price per pound is way up.
Okay.
But people will not let me take it off the menu, so it's still up there for the right price.
And right.
So how do you get it? You got guys out there at midnight with flashlights in the water?
Right. No, we either get it from, right now we try to get it from Rhode Island, and we had it from Maryland. Once Maryland fisheries closed, we went to Rhode Island.
Got it.
So it still comes pretty close.
Huh.
All right, so let's also talk about the beverage program there, because you don't eat seafood without drinking.
No, we have a wonderful, our assistant general manager is actually from Falmouth on the Cape and has a tremendous amount of wine and just beverage knowledge in general. So he set up a really, I think, eclectic, diverse list. You're not going to see 7 Chardonnays, 8 Sauvignon Blancs. We have Albarino, Gadeo, Muscadet, sort of a lot of different varietals that go super great with raw items that have a little bit of salinity and just really crisp, nice flavor. So I think the wine list is really something to look at. And then in terms of our beer, we have an all-bottle list set up in sets. The whole beverage program we tried to have in sets. So we have, you know, 2 IPAs, 2 lagers, and we tried to get the majority of them from New England.
Okay.
And then with our cocktails, again, set up in sets. So it's very easy for our guests to choose between, you know, what they want to drink. They're either sort of fruity and refreshing or more boozy and serious.
The guests or the drinks?
It's easy for our guests to choose the drinks they'd like to enjoy because we give them a path to sort of go down, pick your spirit, pick your flavors, and then enjoy a cocktail. And our beverage manager, her name's Molly Horn. I've worked with her for about 5 years. She's from Founding Farmers Restaurant Group.
Sure.
So she just has great syrups and juices and just creativity. I think she took a lot of their influence and then channeled it into her own unique program. And it's, I think we've got some drinks that are just fantastic.
Top notch.
Okay, well, we only have a couple seconds left, but can you just give us sort of the feel of the restaurant? Is there outdoor dining? What does it feel like inside?
So that we've got, absolutely. We've got a 24-seat patio that's under an underhang. So even if it rains, you should still be protected there.
Okay.
Inside, we wanted to not be kitschy, but we wanted to be a little bit elegant and refined. So all the interiors are blues and grays and some tans. And I wanted to give the impression that it had been sort of salt weathered or sand worn and just sort of sleek and streamlined. We just wanted to be the place you kind of want to go, enjoy food that you'd eat with your family after a day on the beach. Nothing too complicated, just straightforward and really good.
Oh, that's great.
All right, give your street address and your web address so people can find you.
We are at 8630 Fenton Street in the Montgomery Center, Plaza 5 on the Plaza level. And we are at allsetrestaurant.com and on social media at allsetdtss.
Right.
Awesome. Great.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much for coming in.
Back to the beer, guys. So, guys, we've got about 3 minutes and change. One of the things we were talking about during one of the breaks is the whole craft beer thing, which has exploded in the last 6 or 7 years.
A little bit more than that.
Well, you know,
We've been on air for six or seven years.
I know, but it really blew up in the last, I mean, it blew up, you know, I think I'm right, John. Am I right? I'm right, aren't I? Anyways.
Absolutely. I've been doing this for over 20 years, and I would say maybe 10 years ago it started really picking back up. I think there was a big push in the 90s. It kind of fizzled. And then about 10 years ago, it really started picking back up.
But then, you know, when Anchor Steam and all those things where everybody was, like, discovering those. But now the question now is, what's going to happen in this arena? Because there are only so many craft brews and so many places that can serve it and all that. And is there going to be a winnowing out process?
I think the biggest challenge for a lot of the more renowned breweries that we know, the Sierra Nevadas, the Stone Breweries, the Sam Adams, is they're starting to lose market share as a lot of the small local breweries start popping up and making really great beers. That's going to be their biggest challenge. But there's no doubt that an oversaturation starts to force a lot of the lesser known or lesser quality breweries to start fading out.
I mean, I think we're going to see that. And then the other question is what happens to the big boys like Budweiser and all that? So
They still control the market in an enormous way.
Well, don't you think it's a price point situation as well? I mean,
absolutely.
You know, I mean, if a bunch of college kids don't have an interest in beer, but they want to buy beer, they're going to buy the cheapest beer. Do you know what I mean?
A $6 six pack instead of a $12 six pack.
Right, exactly. I mean,
if you don't care about what you're drinking, you're going to go for the lowest price point. And that's true of any industry or anything, not just beer. If you don't have a vested interest in what you're consuming, whatever it may be, you're going to gravitate to the lowest price point, and that's what they have.
All right, we've got 1 minute left with you. So quickly, a lot of people hear IPA, and they sort of go along with it because they don't want to look stupid. What's it mean?
IPA stands for India Pale Ale.
Right.
It's a very specific style of beer.
Maybe he's just talking about himself.
No, I know what an IPA is.
Stupid.
Oh, my God. Boy, I can't wait for the show to be over, but go ahead.
Generally around 6 or 7% alcohol, an assertive bitterness, generally pretty pale in color, a yellow gold, sometimes up to amber, but generally more yellow gold, assertively bitter, and then American hops can go across the map, piney, citrusy, tropical, floral, anything you can think of.
But I've seen dark IPAs, and I think IPAs like the word organic and other, you know, people use it because consumers hear it and go, oh, yeah.
Now there's black IPAs, red IPAs, Belgian IPAs.
BS
IPA has come more to mean hoppy than actually be a specific beer style.
Okay.
Okay.
But at your restaurant you guys serve, you said you have how many on draft?
24 draft lines.
Okay. And what's the mix of those kinds of beers?
We always want to make sure that we have something for every palate.
Okay.
So we have 24 drafts. We keep a mix of something a Budweiser drinker would enjoy.
Like?
We keep, like right now at Brooklyn, we have Sly Fox Helles Lager.
Mm-hmm.
It's a light German lager style.
Mm-hmm.
Minimal hop presence, very easy drinking. We keep a balance between light beers, wheat beers, stouts, IPAs. We want to be able to cater to every palate who comes in looking for a beer.
All right. Cool. Well, we're going to have to end the show, unfortunately. Brooklyn Pint is where on the web and where physically?
BrooklynPint.com. And it's located at 716 Monroe Street Northeast, adjacent to the Catholic University Red Line Metro.
So for a minute, John, I thought you couldn't remember where your own place was.
I suffer from that when I drink.
That's the most important thing. It's literally 30 seconds off the Brooklyn Metro exit.
All right, great. Guys, thanks for coming in. That's
thank you so
pretty much the end of the show.
It is.
Everything you heard about today you can find on the list, areyouonit.com, Nikki's website. You can follow her on Twitter, listen to her on WTOP at 12:40?
I don't know. I have no idea what's going to play me anymore.
But you listen to WTOP, you'll hear her and hear all the updates of what's going on.
We want to thank all of our guests today for joining us. We certainly had a delicious show.
Wait, what? And come today from 4 to 7 to Lamb Jam over at Union Market.
Absolutely. It's going to be a fantastic and delicious time. If you like lamb, this is totally your event. Some of the best chefs in the area are cooking it up and competing and serving some delicious stuff.
And when we show up, they go, David, like that.
All right, everybody. Thank you for a terrific show. It was so, so much fun. And everybody, please have a delicious week.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTLP FM HD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics.